It was Players Weekend, which, nice. On this episode of Baseball Barbercast, we're going to recap the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday games that happened while you were maybe sleeping. I certainly wasn't. On this episode of Baseball Barbercast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbercast, the only baseball podcast in the world that knows it's always Players Weekend. If you're UGK or Outcast, I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And maybe we need to take this thing a little bit more international.
Yeah, I mean, hey, it's a global game. I would say that we have a good amount of international players represented on a regular basis. Are they all getting anthems all the time? That is a different question. We are going to talk about the Players Weekend that was. Yeah, every it depends where you are. I'd say in terms of what kind of anthem you're hearing. I learned that when I was in Canada. Of course, I like that they when I went to the Blue Jays. It is good that you finish with "Oh Canada." That is how it should be. Like you have to. We're all used to sometimes sitting through "Oh Canada," but then I'm like, damn, "Oh Canada's better, man." Oh, Canada kind of rips. Like, I maybe I'm wrong. We've had some anthem discourse before in a more, WBC Olympics context. I don't know. I'm a big O Canada guy.
For me, it's if you play the anthem every day, if every day is Christmas, it's hard for it not to lose its luster. But we're not going to talk about songs and nations on this episode of Baseball Barbercast. We're going to dig into the weekend it was. Now, before we begin, a little context, if this is coming out a little later, and you notice my voice is a little raggedy, or you're watching on YouTube and you're like, where's Jake? The answer is that I had a flight straight up canceled last night. Cancel culture strikes again. I was supposed to fly home from Seattle to New York for a wedding on a red eye. Got to the airport and they said, sick flight. It'd be a shame if something happened to it. And something did happen to it. And so I am at a days in somewhere in Seattle. I am flying home, maybe, knock on wood, through Anchorage, Alaska later today, and will arrive at my home on Tuesday. It has been an absolute travel kerfuffle for me and my beautiful fiance, but the pod must go on.
Yeah, the pod must go on. Last thing I'm going to say about your travel issues, I would say that Mike Petriello is going to be very disappointed in your route efficiency. Not your fault, but this is about as indirect of a path as one can take to your destination. But, we're going to put that to the side and we are going to talk about baseball. As you joked at the top, yes, Jake, it was Players Weekend. We did not really preview it at all on Friday. Now, part of that is because, I'll be honest, I kind of forgot about it. And a big part about that is because while they did announce a few months ago that this was happening again, we didn't have the nicknames on the jerseys. And that was so much of the fun and the goofiness of the Players Weekend. So while this one was a little bit more about celebrating, the players got to use their gear, the players got to talk about, the people that mean the most to them. And those are all good. These are all good causes. I'm not going to, poo-poo any of that. I did hear there were some great stories, some great interactions, some great videos that came out of this weekend. It was none of it was bad, but as far as memorable, there is a reason why I think this kind of slipped under the radar for us.
Players Weekend needs another hook. Right. It's a cool idea. I like that MLB takes the opportunity for players to have the focus. That being said, it is 162 days of players being the focus. Right. And so
should be
as silly as the uniform stuff was a couple years ago. It did make it feel different. You would watch those videos back and it'd be like, oh, that was Players Weekend. It doesn't really have the same extent. Yeah. I know they did some stuff on the hats. But I would say that part of the reason we didn't preview it, Jake and Jordan didn't think it was significant enough to preview it because it didn't pop into our heads, is maybe something of an indictment on the weekend itself, or maybe an indictment on us. But they did play games on Players Weekend. They made them work. Goodness.
That would have been a pretty uninspiring Players Weekend if the players were just sitting around and not playing baseball. As usual, we will begin with the teams that swept. No one mopped this weekend. We got a couple close calls on Sunday, but let's begin with the three sweeps. And I think we have to begin in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where the Brewers of Milwaukee They welcomed in the Cleveland Guardians, who I have been referring to as sort of their American League mirror image over the course of this season. These young small market teams, oh man, how good can they really be, really? Are they actually favorites in this division? Oh my gosh, their record is amazing. How are they doing this with half a rotation at best? And the Brewers, with the news of Christian Yelich being out for the year, having to have back surgery, they were like, you know what? We're fine. Let's just take care of business here. 5-3, 2-1, 2-0. It was close ball games. There were some close moments, but they really handled Cleveland in a very impressive way, especially on the pitching side of things, only allowing those four runs over the weekend.
Now that is gritty middle America baseball right there. Milwaukee versus Cleveland. No one getting remotely close to double digits. That's the heartland, if you ask me.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I would say, again, we've so many questions about both of these teams' rotations. To see what Aaron Civale did, six scoreless on Friday against his former team. And then when you dig into kind of, you know, how, and Freddie Peralta gave them a very good start. Freddie Peralta has been good this year, but he hasn't necessarily been the ace they were maybe hoping for. But when you dig into just how Milwaukee has been sustaining this lead, and some of this is St. Louis and the rest of this division falling on its face. But really, offensively, it's just been Churio, that's a big one. But Contreras has kind of gotten back to best catcher in baseball form. And then Willy Adames has been fantastic, too. You know, some of these younger guys have regressed in a very real way, whether it's Ortiz, Bryce Terang. Those guys have not really been hitting. And now the big question about the outfield is, okay, without Yelich, what are we talking about? It's going to be a lot of Garrett Mitchell, who, you know, missed a lot of the first part of the season with injury. And then Sal Frelick, as much as I love the dude, he has not really been hitting at all. So some questions still in the outfield. But if Churio is going to hit like this, like they're going to be just fine.
I think, I mean, this is such a dumb take, but here you go. Churio's last couple of months really is a reminder why you call a guy like him up when you do, because the spark is in that kid, always has been, right? And we saw him really struggle, or at least tread water over the first couple months of the season, but it's in there. And everyone who'd been around him knew it was in there. Anybody who'd watched him play knew it was in there. And when you're a team without a no-doubt offense in an era where no one can hit, taking someone like Jackson Churio and just making sure he's around seeing big league pitching just in case that late summer rolls around and the 20-year-old is already like one of the best outfielders in the league. Oh, what do you know? Exactly what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's a great way to put it is, you know, who knows what would have happened if they kept him in AA or AAA for the first couple months, and then it takes him longer to kind of find his big league footing. But he's just been fantastic. And obviously a bit of a setback for Cleveland, particularly as it relates to the next series that we are going to talk about, because the Kansas City Royals, in another wonderful Midwest showdown, rolled into Cincinnati. And I mean, this was not even close. 28-3 combined score between the Royals and the Reds over the weekend at Great American. This is coming. I mean, the Reds have just had so many of these series where it's like, oh, maybe. We keep looking at that positive run differential and thinking, oh, hey, wait, maybe the Reds were underestimating them. And then they have weekends like this where they just get absolutely outclassed over the course of these three games. The Royals offense roaring to life, right? I mean, obviously a nice ballpark to hit in, but, you know, they've been so successful offensively at home this season. To see them go on the road and really kick some ass was really impressive. They got some good pitching as well. Bobby Witt Jr. hits a home run with the Pablo Sanchez baseball bat. What more do you want from, I mean, that's as cool as it gets. And yeah, the Royals are now, I believe, only 3 games back of Kansas City, 1 game back of Minnesota, and have started to open up kind of a nice cushion with Boston having some struggles. They're 3.5 up on Boston for that third wild card spot.
Bobby Witt Jr. rolling in to Cincy and hitting there. It's like, this is also a Major League Baseball stadium for a guy who spends most of his days hitting in the pit of woe that is Kauffman, where you got to get all of it and then some for it to be a homer. Going to Cincy, oh, I could use a Pablo Sanchez bat. This will just zip on over the fence. Sign me up. Hey, rip up that contract. I'm going to the Reds.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, Bobby's obviously hit quite well at home, but I mean, what him and Vinny have been doing, and again, it's really just been those two guys. Like recently, Salvador Perez has kind of cooled off. Freddie Fermin is the one who's really been hitting quite well. But is that who you were going to mention?
Well, I was going to make a joke about, Mom, I want Freddie Freeman. We have Freddie Fermin at home. But guess what? What we got at home is pretty good.
Dude, I mean, this dude had over 200 plate appearances last year and was an above average hitter. So, like, we shouldn't be that surprised. But it's been really nice to kind of have him as an option to hit while he's catching, right? Like, this is an incredible luxury for the Royals to have, that they can give Sal a day to not, you know, catching with his gigantic Salvador Perez frame. And he's obviously run kind of hot and cold as he's gotten a little bit older. But yeah, that's like a sneaky huge part of their offensive success is Freddie Fermin.
And then Paul DeJong, Dr. DeJong, the pre-med slugger, has been outstanding since he came over there.
Good him.
I want to pull up, if you give me a second, we'll see if my hotel Wi-Fi can handle it, a list of the players traded at the deadline and like how good they've been since the deadline. And I wonder if Mr. DeJong,
he's up there. He's got an 859, whatever, it's 40 plate appearances, but Paul DeJong, who I guess is basically playing third base every day. I mean, that's pretty much the role that he's been brought in to do. And I know we joked, okay, he's clearly not taking over for Bobby Witt, but yeah, has he been one of the best players traded?
So if you go by WRC plus players traded, number one is Joey Weimer, who has one plate appearance. So I'm not going to count that. Austin Slater, who's platooning, is number two. Then it's Soler, which Dylan Carlson has been fantastic. Jazz Chisholm, who
we'll
is now
to him in a second.
Out for a bit.
Yep.
And then Paul DeJong. So Soler, Carlson, Chisholm, Paul DeJong.
It's just we're going to get to Dylan Carlson here in a second. But yeah, I mean, the Royals, I mean, I think we already knew the Royals were a better team than the Reds, but coming into this weekend, it looked like two teams that were both had a lot to play for. And the Royals just, I mean, it was not remotely close. So really impressive showing for them. And yeah, maybe we will ultimately get an AL Central race with multiple teams, which would be very fun. We talked about that with the NL West, but I feel like it's probably more likely we're going to get it in the AL Central than we are in the National League West. To that point, let's talk about the third and final sweep of this weekend. And that was the Tampa Bay Rays telling the Snakes that your best team in baseball over the last month. That's nice. Or sorry, since like the beginning of June. Yeah, that's nice. Not even just boom, 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 boom. The D-backs come back on Sunday, and it's like, oh my gosh, like they're gonna salvage this series. Corbin Carroll looks amazing. They push it to extras. They ultimately still get walked off by Dylan Carlson. We spent a lot of time at the deadline. Oh man, are the Rays buying low on Christopher Morel? Do the Cubs give up on Christopher Morel? We've known that the Cardinals have essentially given up on Dylan Carlson for longer than, you know, the last couple of weeks. And yet here we are again with the Rays possibly, you know, scooping up a player still, I think 25, 26 years old with a lot of potential. Am I expecting him to be a 900 OPS guy? No, but, you know, he's shown flashes of being an above average outfielder offensively and defensively. And would it shock me if he ends up being a starting outfielder for the 2025 Rays? No, it absolutely would not.
The Rays are now one game behind the Seattle Mariners, who are their own disaster class right now. It's just a reminder that when the Rays sold at the deadline, like they did sell. They undeniably sold. They are a worse team now than they were before, whether or not they win more games, right? Still, they didn't rip it up to the studs in a way that precluded them from competing this year if the team got hot. Now, we're in a scenario where if they do make a bit of a run, I mean, they're five back? They're 6.5 back in the wild card. Like, it's still not very likely. But if they do get hot, you could squint and be like, oh, if only they had Isak Paredes. I just don't think that's fair. I think that this weekend is just a reminder that there's a lot of talent on that roster. In regards to the Diamondbacks, for me, this weekend is just a reminder that how hard it is to chase down the Dodgers. It's really hard. And maybe we gave both them and the Padres too much credit on Friday. Not too much credit, too much leeway.
We'll get to the, yeah. We'll get to the Padres a little bit later. But yeah, it's just disappointing. And And another big takeaway here, and Jesse Friedman over at PHNX Diamondbacks wrote a great thing about Zach Allen, who struggled again this weekend. Just a really a good reminder. You know, I don't want to spoil his article too much, but it's just about fastball command and how even if the stuff itself, the velo's there, the movement stuff is there, fastball command, if that goes backwards, especially for a guy like Gallen, where you're not necessarily overpowering guys, it just kind of permeates to everything else. And suddenly nothing else is working nearly as well. And that is what has dragged him down. Now, he's dealt with injuries, too, which are clearly impacting him to some degree. But that has dragged him down from being a legitimate Cy Young contender over the last 2 years to just kind of a regular 3-4 starter. And the D-backs need more than that right now. I know their offense has carried them in a really real way, but at the same time too, okay, now let's say the D-backs do get into the postseason, which is looking like a decent, really good chance, what Zach Allen are we getting? You know, I mean, he was pretty awesome for most of last October, obviously most of last season, huge workload. Maybe that, you know, ties into some of the regression here too, but that's something that we talked about it last week. What is this rotation gonna look like moving forward? And I think Zach Allen is absolutely a massive part of that.
All right, Jordan, let's take a quick break. And when we return, we'll talk about a couple of opportunities and reveal a warm, fuzzy feeling. And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. I mean, we have this segment, Warm, Fuzzy Feeling. The idea is there are things in baseball any given weekend that fill us with joy and life and love, and recapture the verve and remind us why we like this game. And there is no event that does a better job of that than the Williamsport Classic. Jordan and I were lucky enough to go to this a handful of times back when we worked at MLB. It is like our favorite thing in the world. It is a schlep to get the players there. It is an impressive logistical lift to pull it off. It hits every year. Just seeing the players around the Little Leaguers never fails. This weekend, we had the Yankees and the Tigers rolling into Williamsport for the game. And like, the Yankees have never been there before, right? And it's important to remember that there are Yankees fans everywhere, diehard Yankees fans everywhere who live nowhere near New York, right? And so to have that juxtaposition of the Yankees in Williamsport must have been really, really cool.
Well, right, especially when you expand that to literally the whole world.
Right.
Right. I mean, obviously, there's fans, players on all these international teams whose favorite player is Aaron Judge or Juan Soto. And I think that the Judge and Soto moments and the Gerrit Cole moments were great, but I think shame on me for not looking forward to just Jazz at the Little League World Series. Yeah. Like, duh, like he's injured, which honestly made it better because that meant that he just got to sit in the crowd for pretty much the whole game and obviously become tight with all the Little Leaguers that said he was their favorite player. I mean, there was just so many parts of Jazz in that setting that were so obviously perfect. And I'm so glad that we got to see.
Also,
that.
Jordan, it reminded me of when we did the clinic camp in the Bahamas. Do you remember this? So at the Bahamas Home Run Derby, which Jazz Chisholm is very involved in, they do like a camp for the kids the day before. And I just remember Jazz like working with the kids in just the most genuine way, in the most interesting way, where like he's both not treating them like children, like he's talking to them in a way where they're like adults, but it's also very endearing. The best moment, did you see that he was asked about his grill on the broadcast? And he credited the Fairly Odd Parents and Shiny Teeth and Me. Shout out Skip Chip Skylark.
Poor Chip Skylark, poor Ravitch was just, he was like, what are we talking about? And I'm like, are you kidding me?
Iconic.
Like, this is, first of all, the other funny thing about that, the other best part about that, right, was the contrast of like, do these kids know Chip Skylark? It's like, I don't know. I know he wasn't talking to them, but I was like, these kids are younger than Chip Skylark. Like, that's not an exaggeration. Like, whatever, the character, like Fairly Odd Parents. Like, there are some shows that we know. We talked to Dylan Cruz, you know, at the Futures game. Like, SpongeBob obviously has stood the test of time. I have no sense to how much staying power Fairly Odd Parents has had, but it was absolutely one of my favorite shows as well. So, Jazz is a delight. Another funny Jazz moment, which I'm not sure if you saw, we talked about, he has some, like, an elbow injury. I guess his non throwing arm, and someone commented on his Instagram and was like, you look healthy, bro. Like, come on back. And he responded and he was like, I am, with the crying laughing emoji. And then just said, just got to wait the 10 days.
Incredible.
So, which is just amazing, Jazz. Again, that's Jazz. He's not like, and I knew that's like he was not going to change. So obviously we get to October. His performance is going to be very important and Yankees fans are going to be less patient. And obviously the result of this weekend, which was losing another Clay Holmes blown save, a walk-off on Sunday night was not ideal. It's a really close, amazing game. Skubal and Stroman were both fantastic. But you know, they've had some of these issues late in games, and they are still one of the best teams in baseball. And I think they are benefiting, like a lot of these other teams, that there's no one wants to really jump ahead and say we are the best team in baseball, right? Like, it was the Phillies for a while. We know they haven't been playing awesome recently. Maybe they're getting back to that. But the Yankees still have one of the best records in baseball and are likely going to for the rest of the regular season. But these moments like this are certainly not awesome.
And we were Clay Holmes defenders, I think, for too long. And I don't want to be a Clay Holmes hater, but there really is an issue when you look ahead to the playoffs with the lack of swing and miss. That is legit. That is real. Mm-hmm. And the Yankees bullpen has remained really flimsy even after the deadline. Mark Leiter Jr. is also really disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah. I was about to say, Mark Leiter Jr., I was like, hey, I kind of like this move. This is a guy that can bring in more swing and miss, which we certainly support. He had thrown like 8 straight perfect innings or something, had a lot of base runner in 3 weeks. And then he has been very shaky since he became a Yankee. And ultimately, I believe, was the one that gave up the walk-off last night. So certainly some issues still there. Again, they are getting healthier. The lineup is still looking a lot better. So I think they're in a better place than they were maybe, say, a month ago. But definitely still some questions with the Yankees.
If you want to talk about a team in a better place, let's pivot to the Philadelphia Phillies. Who? Had an opportunity. They were one of 3 opportunities over the weekend. Phillies, Nats, Twins, Rangers, Red Sox, Orioles. But I want to start in Philly because this team was on a schneid for just what felt like forever. We had accepted that they were one of the best teams in baseball. But then from, I think it was Thursday, this past Thursday, dating back to when they got back from London in early June. I mean, they were under 500, right? They were underwhelming, relying on that hot start. And they lose to the Marlins. I think it was on Tuesday. And it was, they had come home from a long road trip, and it was like, oh my God, they lost first game to the Marlins. They get down early in game 2 of a 2-game set to the Marlins, and it's just the booing starts. And Kyle Schwarber, with what might have been the turning point swing of their season. Like, it is very easy to find these specific moments in a season and point to them and be like, that mattered. This mattered. There's just so many things happening all the time, right? But that swing that Schwarber had, I think it was on Wednesday. Grand slam. Phillies take the lead. Phillies win. They then win Thursday, Friday, Saturday, W4, get back in good spirits. They lose on Sunday to the Nationals, but take 3 out of 4 from the Nats. And the Phillies, it could be wrong. They could totally biff it again, but it just feels like they're turning it around in the right direction at the right time.
Yeah, and I'm keeping the Phillies in my top spot of my power rankings this week, and I just think that I look at the best version of them and I still feel like their weaknesses I'm not as worried about as these other teams who have nearly identical records at the top of the standings. And I just think we've seen the best version of all of their team at multiple times. We've seen the bullpen look elite. We've seen the starting pitcher look elite. We've seen the lineup look elite. Like, you can't say that about a lot of these, like almost any of these other elite teams. And that's what, you know, makes me confident in them. So definitely it looks good for them. One note on the Nationals that we have to mention is that James Wood hit an absolutely majestic home run on Sunday that was notable because people started to notice over the last few weeks, like, James Wood hasn't really been pulling the baseball. Had a line drive triple down the line. He had a couple gap doubles, like low liners, but he had not pulled a ball in the air, which, like, in 2024, like, that's like kind of what you want to do, especially when you have real raw powers. You want to pull fly balls in the air that results in, you know, slugging and whatnot. Now, James Wood was still succeeding. He was hitting balls out to the opposite field and was still, you know, doing pretty well. But it was like, oh, what's going to happen here? And it was like, and I was like, listen, this wasn't an issue for him in the minors. He'll make the adjustment at some point. And oh my gosh, this was one of the most aesthetically pleasing home runs we've had all season to the second deck and right in Philly. And yeah, man, they got a monster, dude. Like, he is going to be, as he starts to figure this out, because he starts to put it all together. Yes, there's going to be some swing and miss, but that is a game-changing offensive talent. And for a team that is still, I believe, ranks last in home runs this season, I believe they were 30th or 29th last year, they need power so badly. And James Wood, and once he starts elevating the ball, is obviously going to be able to provide that.
Jordan, can we pour one out for the 2024 Texas Rangers? I think I'm ready to declare them dead on departure.
This is, I think we'll start having some discourse about just like where this ranks in disappointing title defenses. This is a bad season. They have a worse record than the Blue Jays, who have essentially purposefully stopped trying to win, at the deadline and are playing mostly rookies and whatnot. The Rangers did not aggressively buy. They were just like, oh, we'll keep it together and we'll give ourselves a chance for this team to prove that we are actually good. And they're not. They're just not good. At no point of the season did I really think they were that good. And while they were able to avoid getting mopped, on Sunday, this is just a really embarrassing stretch. And at this point, DeGrom, you were trying to hold out for Scherzer and DeGrom and Malley, and like Malley doesn't look good. And why is DeGrom rushing back for this? And I know DeGrom has said, I am going to contribute this year, and maybe he will. And obviously I would love to see Jacob DeGrom pitch again sometime this season, but it's just a bad season. They haven't gelled really at any point. And to almost get mopped at home at this point in the year is a credit to Minnesota, who's certainly trying to push themselves up into that upper echelon of teams, but just so disappointing. I'm not surprised at this point anymore, but yeah, I mean, they're pretty much toast, and that's, you should not be saying that about a defending World Series champion in the middle of August.
Can you take them lower? Answer yes. They have a record one game better than the Washington Nationals. Last opportunity over
that
the weekend,
not the plan,
was Orioles, yeah. Red Sox. These two teams split. Orioles are now tied with the Yankees atop the division. They are in New York this week to play the Mets. I will not be there because, as I mentioned, I'm stuck on the West Coast. But I was supposed to be at Orioles-Mets today. I don't think I will make it in time. The Birds splitting with the Red Sox. The bullpen just still remains a little bit shaky. My biggest criticism of their moves at the deadline, if you remember, was that they were almost projecting players forward. They were betting too much on their developmental group's ability to turn pitchers into real contributors. Now, I would say that it's gone pretty well so far with Sir Anthony Dominguez. That has been a success. Whereas Gregory Soto has been not a success. And it's very obvious that the Orioles could use one more arm.
Yeah. One stat that just blew me away, and I tweeted about this, but Albert Suarez is the one that we've maybe been sleeping on. The first thing, we didn't even acknowledge this a couple weeks ago when they played the Padres. I had no idea it was Robert Suarez's brother. No clue.
Oh, really?
Just absolutely no idea.
Yeah.
I missed that entirely. but now I do know that. But more importantly, he is tied for the major league lead in scoreless starts of at least five innings.
Amazing.
With Hunter Green and Bryce Miller. And Corbin Burns, one of our followers alerted us, has zero such starts this year, which is kind of shocking. And again, Burns has been good. The ERA is there. He has pitched deep into games. He has been generally what they paid for. But the strikeouts have certainly not been there. And it is interesting when we think about Burns, just in the context of this rotation. But yeah, the bullpen, though, that's still the thing that we're going to focus on, basically no matter what. And, Sir Anthony, it's good they're hitting on one of them. But Kimbrel continues to struggle. And it's going to take more than just, I mean, they even Cano has kind of scuffled recently. And that's the guy I really believed in the most. So there's just a lot of issues there. And are you not as concerned about, the bullpen, I know it's still an issue for you.
No, I mean, I'm concerned.
It's not the focus.
Concerned, yeah. I think the sense in Orioles world is it's like less hard to be mad at Cano because they've just used him so much and he has been
the most reliable
and consistent character in the bullpen. And so are you really going to be mad at the person who's bailed you out so many times? It's a little bit harder. I think there's faith that he's going to get things figured out. So those were our mops over the weekend. Before we get out of here, take one more break. We got to give a crown, player of the weekend. Who showed up and showed out? Jordan Schuster.
Yeah. And by the way, Red Sox, we'll talk about you more in the future. The player of the weekend for me is Luis Severino. We actually had two complete games over the weekend as Christopher Sanchez threw one for the Phillies of Philadelphia. However, seeing Luis Severino go all nine for the Mets of New York, it was his second career complete game. Complete game shutout. His last one came in 2018 when he was really, I guess his peak was arguably 2017, but back, you know, peak Yankee Severino is the last time we saw a complete game shutout from him. But for him to kind of give that to the Mets for the Marlins, I know that they ended up losing the final game of the series, but he, to see him go all night to the 113 pitches, he has really been awesome for them. And he's also just so important. If the Mets are going to have any hope here, because that's the other thing that I just wanted to mention about the Mets, and our friend Jolly Olive pointed out this, I saw on Twitter this morning. This is, if they're going to hang around here, you know, they're 64-60, you know, you lose a heartbreaker on Sunday. Their next three series are Orioles, Padres, D-backs, and they're at the Padres, at the D-backs. So they got the White Sox after that, but the Mets are also, it's kind of, you know, they're still two games behind the Braves because the Braves have been so disappointing, but they're going to really have to pick it up here, and they're going to need their most talented pitchers, like Luis Severino. They're going to need guys like him to continue to show up. Again, maybe not a complete game shutout every time, but he is one of my favorite pitchers. That was true even when he was on the Yankees, and it was nice to see him have some success there.
All right, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we will throw things into turbo mode. And welcome back to Baseball Barbiecast. Let's throw it into turbo mode. Pirates taking 2-3 over the Mariners. I am at a wedding in Seattle, Jordan, over the weekend. And there are a lot of Mariners fans around. And the brother of the father of the groom is my college catcher. Shouts out to Tate. Tate's uncle, season ticket holder for the Mariners. And he had some things to say. We'll just leave it at that. Things are not exactly joyous right now here in the Pacific Northwest in regards to their baseball team.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they reached definitely a rock bottom. You know, Skeens versus Gilbert generally delivered was very entertaining. Gilbert threw his hardest pitch of the he had like the four hardest pitches of the game, even harder than Skeens. He was good, but Mariners offense obviously continued to be terrible. They wake up on Sunday, score a bunch of runs against Jake Woodford, as they should. And Kirby bounces back after the worst start of his career. But yeah, no, I mean, they are now, I mean, listen, forget, now it's no longer about, because like a few weeks ago, I would say like, oh, wow, they're playing like crap, but okay, their place in the standings is still like pretty good, right? Can't say that anymore, because the Astros, you know, win their series against the White Sox, and now the Mariners sit four back of Houston. So they are going to now have to outplay Houston over the next 6 weeks, which is not going to be easy. So that is where the Mariners are at, and they should be ashamed.
And if you want things to get easier, they don't, as the Mariners head to Los Angeles to play the Dodgers. Woohoo! Next up, Astros
Fun times.
Astros over the White Sox, taking 2-3, but the White Sox did win. The White Sox beat the Astros.
They did, and we're not going to do sorry for your mentions this week, because I had a bunch of candidates. I mean, Cleveland getting swept, you could take a look at. The Reds ones are good. Any game where you lose to the White Sox is a pretty much guaranteed delightful sorry for your mentions, even for a team like the Astros, who are playing very well. But people were not happy on Friday night. But anyway, you know, in theory, you should sweep every series against the White Sox. But still, this was a successful weekend for Houston. And I think we are getting Justin Verlander back, right? I think he will be coming back soon. So that is a pretty big deal for the Astros of Houston. Cubs and Blue Jays, Jake. Cubs and Blue Jays. The Cubs took 2-3. I watched 0 minutes of this series. Here is, I'm just going to ask the question. Now, the Cubs have sort of worked themselves kind of back into the mix, I guess. I mean, they're past the Reds. They're only a half game back of the Cardinals, who have been terrible recently. Which season is more disappointing, the Cubs or the Blue Jays?
Ooh, The Cubs.
Interesting.
Yeah, the Cubs. And I will say this about the Cubs. They did get the run differential over zero last night, or over the weekend.
Oh, we're back in the green, baby. We're back here. We're back up to plus four. Congratulations. I'm sure that was the goal of this season. I think I agree with you, but also, like, again, you go back to what the preseason expectations were. All the projections had the Blue Jays at 87, 88, 89 wins. The Cubs were more 80, 81, 82. But I still think I agree with you, right? Because of the division that we thought they were going to have a better opportunity to come out on top of, because of Council, because of some of the moves that they made. I think I agree with you, but I am really curious what people think about that, because I think those are two way up there in terms of most disappointing teams this season, and I expect them both to kind of end up in sort of an irrelevant place in the standings.
Next series, Dodgers over Cardinals. The Cardinals are at a negative 62 run differential. We were one of the, you know, many shows and prognosticators that loved their deadline, and it just hasn't led to wins yet.
Yeah, I mean, Fetty's been okay. Fam has been good. But again, it wasn't it really. We've just been exposed to some of the other problems with this roster. And yeah, I mean, I thought there was a brief glimpse there where it looked like they could maybe push up against Milwaukee. They were now 11 back. The Brewers are cruising. And this is, I mean, we're now going to be back to, you know, ask them some really tough questions about just, I think, the Cardinals' leadership. And just what the direction this roster is going to take moving forward, whether that's with the field staff, whether that's player development, whether that's, you know, the front office coaches, whatever. They are heading towards another, like, again, think about how shocking it was what happened to them last year. And now they are going to be in danger of finishing below 500. I mean, even if they don't make the postseason, there had to be more steps forward, and that has just not been the case for St. Louis. So Dodgers able to kind of handle things here. Nice to see them get a series win on the road. They're starting to get healthier. Glasnow injury scare is a little bit concerning, although they seem to be suggesting it's not actually that bad. I don't know. That certainly is not great. They're shuffling in and out so many guys on both offensively and defensively. It's exhausting to kind of follow.
I don't believe the Dodgers when they say anything about pitcher injuries at this point, because it's always like, you know, like, it's fine. He's Dustin May's esophagus is going to be okay. Don't worry about it. And then it's like, you know, I know that they're like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. But like, I need to see that it's not that big of a deal, you know?
Totally. No, I think that's fair. But again, like, they've just now we're dealing with injuries to the position players, and Tommy Edman's going to be coming back, which is hopefully a good thing. How is he going to fit
Freddie
in?
Freddie Freeman hurt.
So a lot of Freddie Freeman injured now. So he just jammed his finger. Hopefully that's not a long-term thing. A lot of moving parts with the Dodgers, but for them to still manage to just like beat the team that is struggling 2 out of 3 on the road is encouraging. Otani, oh my God. Okay, yeah. So we should be doing more Otani, oh my God moments, but we'll have plenty of those over the rest of the season. Three more series, two more in turbo mode. We got the Rockies taking 2 of 3 over the Padres. We talked about this months ago. The Rockies are just going to ruin a lot of team seasons. Whoever goes to Coors Field over these last 6 weeks are going to have a bad time. Padres, we were feeling awesome. Of course they dropped this series. I'm glad they were able to get one of these wins, but it's like... It's still one of the worst teams in baseball, and you hope that you can't just keep throw your hands up and say Coors. Like, if you're actually that good, go win that series, go sweep that series, as far as I'm concerned. And they weren't able to do that. So they are not able to make the progress there that they were kind of, we were all kind of hoping that, oh man, this NL West race, here we go. And then stuff like this happens.
Braves take 2 out of 3 from the Angels. Chris Sale is going to win the Cy Young. Like, he's going to win it. And that's awesome and amazing and deserves
sure
this whole
looks
episode.
That way.
But
yeah.
What a thing. Good for Chris Sale. It's always funny to me when the Angels play the Braves just because of how connected these two front offices and organizations have been over the last couple years. It feels almost like it's the farm team for the Braves.
Yeah. And the Angels, man, there have been some things that I know, like, that in some ways with some of the young players that have come up, it's like there are some reasons to be optimistic. And then I still just think it's so, so, so bleak. Yeah, Chris Sale now has opened up. He leads all of pitchers in Fangraphs WAR 5.2. Second place is Scooble at 4.5. So he has just been he's been right there with Scooble. I know not quite as many innings, but he has been incredible. And in some ways, we shouldn't be shocked. He's one of the best pitchers of his generation. So for him to get healthy and show that again is maybe not that surprising, but it had been a long time since we've seen this, and he is really, really, really special this year.
And should note, Austin Riley hit on the hand with a pitch. I think they're still waiting for results on that.
Ugh. No, another one. Another hit by pitch on the hand. We're going to lose a guy for multiple weeks. That would absolutely suck. Hopefully, I am wrong about that. One final series, Jake. Normally, one of our segments over the weekend is a first time for everything because, oh, you never know what you're going to see when you go to a ball game, something you've never seen before. Well, unfortunately, this week, we will be doing the last time for everything. And in this case, that is the Battle of the Bay. The Giants and A's, after many years and many showdowns in the Coliseum, at Oracle, at their past stadiums, will no longer be playing these games, of course. And I guess they will continue to play in Sacramento. And I don't really know what the vibe's going to be at those games. And of course, the Sacramento A's will show up in San Francisco every once in a while. But this series obviously meant a lot to a lot of people. This is something that I just like reading about because, boy, am I disconnected and boy, do I not really understand the weight of it. But for the A's especially, to induct their 2024 Hall of Fame class this year with Jose Canseco, with Miguel Tejada, with a bunch of other past, you know, A's luminaries. And for Canseco, who, listen, I know Canseco as a personality for a lot of reasons is difficult to take seriously. But you know, to listen to his speech and to listen to him get emotional about what Oakland, you know, baseball means to him is it's meaningful. And one of many, of course, he's not the only one that can speak to that. But this was to see them split this two game set was it's just another reminder of what is being lost by taking Major League Baseball out of Oakland. And it bums me out. So, you know, we salute all the fans. I'm sure all the Giants fans and A's fans of which the series has meant a lot. I'd love to hear anyone that was at the series this weekend or people emails from A's fans and Giants fans, memories of this series. I'd love to hear from those people, but yeah, obviously gotta salute a rivalry that will now simply not be the same. And that sucks.
And that's our show. Thank you for enduring my scratchy voice. I hope to get home. I have a flight to Anchorage, Alaska today, and that will surely do the trick.
Let's hope that we are talking to Jake in normal circumstances on Wednesday. I that's all I will say. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. Thank you to all you lovely listeners. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Jake Mintz, take it away. So sign us off here.
Today is the four-year anniversary of a deep drive into left field by Castellanos, which I just learned has its own Wikipedia page. Everyone have a great Monday.